You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Hello, welcome back to the X-Man podcast. I'm your host, Doc Coyle. It's been, I guess, off and on for the last few weeks. If you know, you see the title of this show, I guess you can get an idea of what I'm talking about today. And it hasn't been addressed yet on the show. Is that, and if you follow me on social media, then you understand that my father passed away a few weeks back, and actually he passed away on the day I was actually working on my last show. So I had to like stop working on my show, or I found out that he had passed away while I was working on my last show. And I mean, you know, I think it's helpful probably just to kind of talk about how it all came about. My father was 66 years old, and he's been on this show. So if you're a fan of the show, you're familiar with him and how amazing he is and was. And my father was really focused on health, but he did drink. And that was really the only bad thing he did. But other than that, he ate very healthy and was very health conscious. So I thought he'd be around a long time. So it was very sudden, and it was just a situation where I hadn't heard from in a few days, and he had called me, and I'd got him a new computer last year so he could do like FaceTime and stuff. So he would always video me on Facebook to call me instead of calling me on the phone. And he'd call me one night and I missed his call, and I called him back the next day and he didn't get back to me. And that wasn't uncommon for us to maybe play phone tag for a couple days or something. And then I messaged him maybe a day after that, and he didn't get back to me. And it just so happened to be the week that I was kind of taking a break from social media. Myself and other guys in Bad Wolves were being targeted and harassed on some of the platforms. And we just felt it was a good idea just to kind of take a step back and just get off. So I was kind of, I guess, dealing with my own mental health wellness that week anyway. And I was a little disconnected because I wasn't really on social media, and I was doing a lot of just, I guess, like what you would characterize as self-care type work. And the band had made an important decision. So we were kind of celebrating a little bit that weekend. And by Monday, or the night before that Sunday, I just realized, I was like, man, I haven't heard from my dad. I'm like, this is strange. So I called people who were close to my father and said, hey, have you heard from dad? And then everyone was like, 3 days, you know, they hadn't heard from him. And immediately once I kind of heard that, I knew something was wrong. And I went on a walk, and we live right by the beach. So I walked to the beach, which I usually do just to walk and get some sun and get outside. And from there, I called the police to do a wellness check on my dad, and, you know, just to check in. But I pretty much knew then, and because there was no reasonable explanation as why he wouldn't get back in touch with anyone. And so it was weird because it's beautiful, it's Long Beach, I'm on the beach, but it was just completely, I was processing my grief then, even though I didn't know for sure. And then I called back the police like an hour later because they didn't get back to me, and they said they were still investigating. So that to me was kind of definitive. And And then they sent an officer to my home in Long Beach to inform me. And it was, you know, it was devastating. And it's the worst case scenario in something like that. And like I said, it was completely sudden. And so my whole world was kind of flipped upside down. I had to go to New Jersey and kind of deal with everything and deal with my dad's apartment and funeral and my family and friends, and it was just a lot. And then there was some family drama within that that made my life hell for a little more than a week while I was down in New Jersey. So I was in New Jersey for about 2 weeks, and you know, I got back about a week ago exactly to LA. So it's been, this whole process has been around 3 weeks, but my father probably died on the 25th of March and just wasn't found for a few days later. And basically it's just, it's been kind of go with just dealing with everything. You know, that's, I think, the thing you don't really think about when you're younger, or maybe when, if you are younger, you get to just be in your feelings about it. Whereas when you're older, you have to actually deal with the business of kind of transitioning someone from a state of being to a state of non-being. And I don't know, it's been, you know, my mother died a year ago, almost exactly within the week, which is extremely eerie. And believe it or not, ever since my mom passed away, all I've thought about is my father passing away, if that makes sense. Like, I've just thought about mortality and relatives who are getting older, or maybe not old, but I, to some degree, my dad died at 66, my mom died at 69. I never felt like they got old. They were on their way to getting old, but they never felt old to me. And I guess there are ways I could say that they were, but it just never hit like that in many ways. And I don't know, it's and today, so I'm recording this on the Tuesday, 4:20, and this is also the day of, you know, the Derek Chauvin, George Floyd trial announcement for the jury, the guilty verdict. And so it's just, I don't know, I just woke up today just kind of blah, because I've just been going. I'm dealing with my dad's thing, came home to LA, went right into the studio with the band, was there for a week, and I really got to kind of clear myself away from all the, I don't know, I've just been kind of like going like a shark. And I think today's the first day I've just gotten to try and be normal, I guess, or yeah, just trying, oh, let's get back to what we were doing. And it's ironic because, like I said, the last day, March 29th, that's the last day I did a show and recorded something. So it's maybe that's what it is. Maybe that's why I've felt so, I mean, you could call it depression. You could call it a weight. You can call it I call it a weight because for me, I get stuck and I don't want to, I want to crawl in a hole. You know, today I had to do my other show, Last Words, and I just didn't want to do anything. I just wanted to just, I don't know. I guess, I think for things like this, sometimes you do really need to just take time off, but I've kind of been off. I don't know. And I remember when my mom passed away, I'd have these periods where I'd be like, okay, I'm ready to get back to work. All right. And every time you think you're ready, your psyche really isn't ready. You're probably 2 weeks further away from where you think you are. And I don't think I really have processed everything. And that's okay. But it's going to manifest itself in a lot of ways that I can't even anticipate. And I don't know. I I don't know. I guess I'm stuck between these two versions of the world. What does normal look like? You know, what is getting back? What is, you know, I think when these things happen, it forces you, at least for me, it's forced me to like look at my own life and say, what do I want out of my life? Because you know what? There ain't that much fucking time. If I live to be as old as my dad, I've got 25 years left, which is much less than half of the life I've lived. So it's not a lot of time. It doesn't feel like a lot of time. Maybe, I guess, in the grand scheme it is. But as you get older, time moves faster. And then you have something like a pandemic where you've existed in it, but you didn't. Have we lived? Have we thrived? I don't know. I've done some interesting things, some cool things. But it doesn't feel like the most fully realized version of living. And it's interesting because my father did not die of COVID. But in many ways, I feel like he was a casualty of this time because he... You know, I've talked about this a little bit before about how the pandemic, you know, it got forced into a culture war where people kind of instinctively burrowed into their side or their camp. And, you know, my father was pretty demonstrative about his left-leaning politics, but I think he got in that stance of, right, I'm in the house and I'm not doing this and I'm not, because obviously he was concerned about his health and getting sick and having trouble with that. But I remember talking to him and he hadn't gotten vaccinated yet. And I was trying to convince him, you know, hey, make sure you're on top of this. You're in the age group that should be able to get it. And I'm like, so you can like go back to doing things. My father's a piano teacher and he was like, I'm never going back to teaching people in their houses. I'm like, Dad, what are you talking about? Like, you gotta, what are you gonna spend your whole fucking life in your apartment? And, you know, and I wonder if part of him was kind of resigned to that, but you're always lacking. You're gonna be lacking something. You need human contact. You need to be in the world. And we cannot, as me, as someone who is all about the safety and all about vaccinations and all about doing all the proper things to get back things to normal, we also can't just live our lives in fear. Oh, something might happen. Yeah. Something might happen every day you walk out of your house. The safest place in the world is probably four padded room, padded walls, white walls. But is that life? That's confinement. So, And I feel like this happened with a few friends of mine who are very much tied to the political tribalism of, I'm in this camp where masks don't exist and vaccines don't exist, and I'm in this camp where we're never leaving our houses again, and we're it's fucking ridiculous. We're so tied into like these boxes that, oh, I'm team this, team that. It's And unfortunately, I don't know if fortunately or unfortunately, that has kind of burrowed a little bit into my thinking or feeling dealing with the loss of my parents is, and I don't know if this sounds fucked up, but it's kind of learning from what they didn't do. And I, you know, I feel, it's like my mother wanted to move to Florida, and that was like a dream that was always just there on the back burner, but that she never got to quite fulfill. My father talked about moving to Malaysia because he had all these people he met on the internet and he liked the culture, but he never got to do it. And life is just not going to wait around for you to want to do something. And it's like, if I want to do something, I got to do it, because this shit could be over. And I think when it comes to grief, and grief, listen, I think grief can manifest itself in a lot of different ways, right? I mean, today we have a nation, and I mean, and really a you could say the entire West or maybe the world is watching what was going down with the trial today. And you have this symmetry, right? Because I remember being in high school when the OJ verdict was read and everyone was there for that, or probably the better parallels when the LAPD police officers were let off in the case of Rodney King, which led to one of the worst riots, or maybe the worst riot in LA history. And so, and this had the opposite outcome. And so it was a lot of rejoicing, but I think it also is mixed with this pain, right? This, this idea, oh, well, like it's weird, right? Like, cause by any measure, it should, what happened with the verdict is what should have happened. So I guess maybe we should feel relief, or we should feel like, oh, that, well, should what's supposed to happen that's happened be a cause for celebration? Does that mean everything has changed? And I'm just saying, like, grief represents itself in a lot of ways. And I think in the most present way is trying to, like, preserve something that's not there, right? The seven stages of grief, and the last one's acceptance. And I think with my father, I accepted it even before I knew. And it was like, that time is over. And it just sucks, you know, he's not going to call, you know? And I think luckily I did the work as an adult to not be so dependent on that, you know, that connection, right? As the parent to son or daughter relationship, it's like a safety blanket, you know, that's something there. And that was, I mean, I felt it the most when I moved to LA, and especially being away from my dad, because me and my dad were really close. We'd have dinner every Sunday, you know, before I moved 6 years ago. And that was so tough. That was the toughest thing about moving from New Jersey to LA. And that was the thing that I always thought about, of like, would I ever move back? I was like, well, only if I have to help my parents or something. But just that, oh, there's a 3,000 mile gap. So that was just the power of that, of like physically, right? That physical, like, my parents aren't there. And it's, and once you get to that age, right? When I'm 35, my dad's 60, it becomes a little more about, you're not there for them as much as they're there for you. But they're, that idea of being a child to some degree, and they being there for you, it still exists. And so it's something I'm not sure how it's going to manifest. You know, I hope it manifests somehow in maybe some creative work or art or expression. And even this part of this show, you know, I was supposed to go with another show that ended up having to push back, and I could have did something else, but I was like, you know what? This is the fucking elephant in the room, and it needs to be talked about. And what I owe to my audience is authenticity. That's all that really matters. Because we all exist, especially all these fucking virtual spaces. And what I experienced when I was taking that break from social media, and the only reason I even got back on was so that I could inform people about my dad's passing. And now I've kind of got back in some of those old habits, but it made me think about that. I don't think one can actually be authentic in social media spaces. And the reason why is because it's all based on the idea of some type of response or validation, right? So if any of us do a post, right, and it gets zero likes, zero comments, I think we inherently kind of feel like we're invisible, we're not heard. We need that ping pong of expression, acknowledgement of expression. I'm validated as a human being. Maybe my feelings are validated, or even if maybe you're a troll, and so just by someone, you say something, you piss someone off, and they attack you, that's its own form of validation. And because of that, every act, every picture you post on Instagram, every tweet, everything is a performance. We're always fucking performing all the time. And there's something like, even me just thinking about it, it's actually almost making me physically ill right now. And I don't know how to exist in those spaces without falling prey to that, because I have all of the human stuff that we all have, which is a need to be recognized, a need to feel like we're not alone, and use these tools to hopefully feel less alone. But sometimes we got to look at ourselves and say, who are we? Why are you doing things? Why am I doing things just for other people? Why can't I have my own moments? And in the space I work in as a musician, as an entertainer, my job is to entertain. I think I'm good at it. This show is entertainment, right? This show is content. How do we know that this is authentically me? I don't know, but it's this thing we think we know, but right? This is in itself is a performance, right? Anything you put out there, it becomes that, right? The only true fucking artist is the person that paints a painting or writes a poem and sticks it in their fucking closet and no one ever sees it. That's probably the only true art, because it doesn't need to be validated. It doesn't need to be commodified. It doesn't need to be turned into a performance. And that's something I'm really struggling with, because when you get away from it all and then you see people that you're friends with, family with, and you see them stuck in this cycle of fucking outrage and needing to comment on everything that ever, it's ever happened, and they're so invested in things that if you shut it off, it's like it doesn't even fucking exist.
Ever wonder what a punch from Elton John feels like?
Or how you cope with having turned down the chance to be in Nirvana?
Or what signal Keith Richards gives when he wants you to get the hell out of his hotel room?
Fans of Too Much Effing Perspective don't have to wonder, because they've heard these exact stories and a jillion others on our podcast. I'm Alex Hoffman, former tour manager for Radiohead.
And I'm musician and comedy writer Alan Keller. On the TMEP show, we get guests like Nancy Wilson from Heart, Jeremiah Freites from the Lumineers, and Modern Family's Julie Bowen to tell us things they may have only shared with their therapist, clergy, or a TMZ stringer.
So join us on Too Much Effing Perspective. That's EFFING Perspective, the only podcast you crank up to 11.
Hey, what's up? This is Blake Weiland. I'm the host of the Tone Mob Podcast. It's a show where I interview guitar people about guitar stuff. We talk about their pedals, their amps, their accessories, their preferences, all that stuff, as well as a healthy dose of whatever comes up. Topics have ranged from aliens to addiction and anywhere in between. Oh yeah, and pizza. We're definitely going to be talking about pizza. So get the show wherever you're listening to this podcast at. Just search The Tone Mob in your search bar and it will pop right up. Come join us. We're having a lot of fun. Thanks for checking it out.
Hi, this is Chad Nicefield.
And this is Justin Press.
We're the host of Making Waves, the Shiprock podcast, a part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. We're inviting you to sail away with us on an epic journey in musical enlightenment. Every week, we bring you only the best artists in rock music and discuss everything from the cruise to the stage to the saga of being a professional recording artist. We'll have lots of special guests along the way, so tune in every week.
Your stateroom is available every Monday morning, so welcome aboard.
And even that goes for news, like what happened today with the trial. And I know that it's not what people want to hear. I didn't comment at all because I feel like that's part of the performance. Let me communicate to the world that I'm such a good person because I believe this thing, or I support this cause, or I'm with these people. And it's just kind of, I don't connect to it in the same way other people do. And it's probably a little more callous. It's a little more disconnected. But I think the only way you can be fucking sane now is to be slightly disconnected. Like at its heart, I believe empathy is a very powerful and important tool for human connection, human understanding, and being a well-rounded kind of moral figure. But what we've done is our empathy, it gets hijacked every day by these tools, and you're being told what you should be angry about, what you should be sad about. And more often than not, it's not things that are tactile. It's something that's happening across the globe or in another city, or and you tend to forget how big the fucking world is. Like, I'm in California, like it's far from here to Minneapolis. Like, if you had to walk it, that's the funny thing about planes and cars and even the internet, right? It's like, boom, I'm there. I'm in Minneapolis, but you're not. And there's so much bad shit that happens that if you're connected to every bad thing, if you're glued to your Twitter, you're glued to a news feed, you're glued to CNN, and these are mechanisms that within a capitalist society, they only function through making a profit. And to make profit, they have to sell advertising, or they have to get subscribers. And so that means they have to do the thing that gets the most attention and yada, yada, yada. Nothing new. But what's more important, being sane or being the most informed or being the most empathically connected to whatever is going on that week or that day or that hour? I mean, this shit happens so quick. I can't keep up with the things people are mad about. Like, people, like, I guess the Oakland Raiders posted, like, I can breathe. They posted that, and everyone got flipped out about it. It's like, dude, they're trying their best. I mean, people don't get the words right sometimes. I don't know. That's what you're going to be pissed off about? But we got to be pissed off about something. But it's weird. You shut it all off, and all of a sudden you're not pissed off anymore. And you don't, oh, why was I pissed off? I don't know, because I went to the place. I went to the fucking, you know, mule kicks you in the dick contest, and I kept getting kicked in the dick, and I wondered why I was in pain. And it's and everything that happened with the band on social media before this, where the band were being harassed and targeted, it made me just say, like, is this worth it? You know? And yeah, it made me just want to, like, disappear, get away. You know, what's the price of your sanity? What's the price of your mental health, your emotional health? And it made me not want to talk about politics as much or at all, at least not now. So why? Am I really making a difference? Me, my two cents? I'm sure I might influence some people or maybe enlighten some people. I've always felt it's not worth being said unless you're bringing something new to the conversation. That was my philosophy when I wrote. It's like, okay, what are you saying that someone else isn't saying? Right? This is why I generally tend not to post about holidays, or I don't always post when someone famous dies, because it's like, well, what are you saying that hasn't already been said? And this, where we're at with this stuff is just fucking, it sucks. It really, really sucks, because people impose things on you that you don't even put out there yourself. They just put you, like I said, they put you in that little, you're on this team and this team. Like, who settles on that team? Where did you hear that? They don't know. They're just stuck. They're stuck in a fucking loop. So it's no reason. Every fucking week there's a new Groundhog Day movie, right? Where the day repeats. There's one of those new movies every 2 months now. Because that's what we're all doing. We're just all on a fucking loop, doing the same shit, making the same mistakes, and then wondering why we're not happy. And we don't break the cycle. And I've gone back and forth so many different times with this particular situation because it, you know, what it blew up last summer, the protest, and then that turned into riots and turned to looting. And even though 90% of it was, or maybe more, was positive. But I think the fallacy of it is putting our eggs in baskets that are like individual situations, right? Like, I don't think this one person's tragedy is necessarily going to either solve the problems or create what people think they want out of it. But I could be wrong, and I hope that's just not me being cynical. And I think, of course, you get older, you become less idealistic or less activated. And what I think the problem is, I think people's expectations are misaligned, and their expectations are there should be no one that is killed by the police, or no black people killed by the police. And I'm like, oh, so the goal is zero. I'm not saying it's not a good goal. I'm just saying, well, how do you do that? The way you do that is get the cops can't have guns. It's got to be like you're in France or some shit. That's it. Because what I'm saying is, if you're going to be emotionally wired into situations that with people you don't know, right? That is a fucking, that is an empathic weight that you're going to carry around. Like every time something happens, I live in LA, but something happens in Ohio and I'm emotionally invested. Something happens over here, I'm emotionally, how can you do that and actually live your life unless that's your full-time job? Because it's going to keep happening. And I think that's what I think worries me about, is like people's misaligned expectations about what is a reasonable outcome that they think will be acceptable. Because I don't think the reality of the world comports with those expectations. And so that, to me, is going to lead to a lot of disappointed people, a lot of angry people. And I don't know how it's going to manifest. So, you know, sorry, I know it kind of changed from what I was talking about with my father and my parents to this, but I think I'm grieving. I think the world's grieving in their own kind of ways. We're at the tail end of this pandemic, at least in America. There's 2 months behind us in Europe. I'm just hearing they have record numbers in India. So everyone's at different places with this, but in America, we can kind of see the light at the end of the tunnel. And I think a lot of people, and listening, I think you put myself in this boat, that do not know kind of what normal to get back to. Some people are like, yep, this is my new life. Up in my basement, up streaming. And that really kind of scares me, because I do want to get back to something like the way it was before. I would like that personally. So how am I dealing with grief? One day at a time. And that involves accepting realities. That's what dealing with grief is, just accepting realities. You don't have to be happy with it. You don't have to prefer it, but it is seeing the world as it is, not the way you wish it to be. That's maturity. And, you know, and I just want to be someone whose life is not dominated by fear. And I want to make, you know, I got to make my bucket list now. I'm 40 years old. I need a bucket list now, and I need to start knocking them out, because there's a lot of shit I want to do. And I've realized now more than ever, there is nothing worth staying in a situation that you're not happy with. Nothing. And if you're willing to sacrifice yourself for maybe someone else or an environment, I get it. Everyone's lot in life is different. Some people have responsibilities that I don't have. So, you know, I definitely don't want to put that on anyone else. We all have what we're dealing with, but I feel like I'm in a privileged position that I can pursue whatever I want at kind of my heart's desire. And that makes me really, really lucky. Not everyone has that opportunity. So if I have that luck, if I have that, those opportunities, I got to take advantage of it. There's nothing stopping me. Nothing. Except will and fear and effort. That's it. So that's what I'll take with that. And I'll hopefully just sharing that with everyone listening to the show. Maybe it's a little helpful. You've lost someone. I mean, we've lost so many people in this last year. And like I said, and if it wasn't directly to COVID, it was situations like my dad, where I feel like if it wasn't this time, maybe he wouldn't have been home alone. Maybe he would have had someone, hey, Kev, you're, dude, you know, with his habits or whatever. So I think he's a casualty. And most of us is probably, if we don't know someone directly, we know someone to know someone, or we lost our lifestyle, we lost our way we make a living. We lost a lot. So we all got to deal with that, but we got to accept the way it is and figure out how to get better, figure out how to move forward. And I'm really looking forward to that. But there's no shortcuts. One day at a time. You can't just go, oh, I'm fine, I'm better. That's not how it works. It's just it'll hit you when it hits you. And I'm a firm believer that death is a part of life. The hardest thing for me was almost dealing with other people's pain relating to me, you know, more so than my own pain, which is what it is. And it hits me when I least expect it, and it hits me in waves, and it's crazy. So, but I thought it was really important to share this with all the listeners of the show, because I've been absent 2 out of the last 3 weeks, and I was damn near going to cancel another show, and I didn't want to do that. And I had to talk about it. And I don't think this would fit in the intro of another show. So that's what this is. So thank you guys for listening. I appreciate having this outlet, and I appreciate people that get something out of this show. It's a lot of work and a lot of effort, and I handle it with care. I try to do the best I can to provide the listeners with something that's entertaining and enriching and informative and connective and human. And that's it. And authentic. I'm trying to fucking, you know, everywhere I go, it's something or someone encouraging me, and I feel like everyone else, to not be who they are. And I think that's at the top of my bucket list, is find out who, I think I know who I am, but you know, how do I express that in the most real way possible? And hopefully this can be a case of not when keeping it real goes wrong. Maybe when being true to our most authentic self goes correctly, it manifests itself in amazing ways, because you're not living with fear of something, whether that's fear of not making money, or fear of not being accepted, or fear of not being loved, or fear of losing. And I think that's the thing. I don't want to live my life trying not to lose. And that's been the big lesson for me. Don't just play not to lose. Don't play to for something too far down the pike. So, all right. Well, listen, everyone have a great week. Hopefully this hasn't been too somber, but life hits you that way sometimes. And I just appreciate everyone here, and you guys take care, and I'll be back next week with a more normal X-Man experience. So thank you guys for listening, and Mamba's out.
and thought of all the stupid things I'd said.
It is now 2024, and the choice is up to you. Do you listen to good podcasts, or do you listen to bad ones? Well, we've got a suggestion for you. How about you listen to a good podcast for the first time in your miserable life? I can think of one. Overnight Drive. Going strong. 11 years now. The podcast about nothing. Your favorite podcast's favorite podcast. Do you enjoy nothing? so do we. Why don't you come over and check it out and stop listening to other podcasts? Thank you.